Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We're chatting with Craig Hemke, founder and editor of tfmetalsreport.com. We'll be chatting precious metals. We'll also be chatting about the Fed. But early on this year, Craig, we're seeing a couple trends. And I hesitate to call them trends because we are only just a couple days into this trading year. But gold's remaining pretty volatile, right around 1800. Right now it's just under 1800. It was just over 1800. Sounds a lot like last year when all we were talking about is 1800. But the focus really is on the Fed. We just had Fed minutes come out this week from their last meeting, and we are also seeing interest rates continue to rise, especially on the long end. You look at something like The 10-year is not far off of multi-year highs. The most recent high was back in March, 1.765%. 10-year's not far off of that right now. And as I said, the trend, at least right now, in the longer-term rates is up. What's catching your eye, Craig, in terms of early-on assessments of trends for 2022?
Well, hi, guys, and Happy New Year. It has been a heck of a week, hasn't it? Gosh, we ended last year about how I kind of thought we'd end, with a little rally, you know, between Christmas and New Year's. That often happens. And price rallied nicely and the dollar was falling, and thought, well, maybe we could carry some momentum into the new year. And man, everything just immediately changed as soon as we started trading on Monday. And you mentioned the bond market and higher nominal rates. The thing that caught my eye even more than that right out of the chute back on Monday was the trading in the TIP. TIP is an ETF made up of TIPS, Treasury Inflation Protected Securities. And in a way, it's kind of an inverse of real interest rates, inflation-adjusted interest rates. As a TIP goes up, real interest rates are coming down and vice versa. That trend has been up since November of 2018, when the Fed was forced to kind of start changing policy direction. You know, they played this game for about 5 years, talking about tapering and drawing down their balance sheet and the rest. The 10-year note got to 320, and then the stock market crashed in December of 2018, and that's when everything changed. That's when the TIP started trending higher. Well, anyway, the TIP was strong last week. But now, just in the 4 days as we record this, the first week of the new year, it's down 3 points from 129 to 126. Now, that's not in itself, you know, like a death knell for the precious metals. But, you know, if it breaks down further, and it's already down 3 points this week, and if it falls another one, gets below 125, it's going to look like it's finally breaking that uptrend that's lasted, you know, all the way back, as I said, to November 2018. And that, you know, I guess that wouldn't really surprise me given what the Fed tried to start telling everybody yesterday. And we may very well be in for a period here that's going to continue to resemble 2021. In fact, maybe the first 3 or 4 months of this year will be a lot like 2021. But then I don't know, man. The Fed, you know, market finally called their bluff after 5 years of that nonsense. Back in the prior decade, the market may call their bluff after about 5 months of it this time. We'll see.
Well, Craig, obviously the bond markets play a big part in all of this, and the bond vigilantes do as well. I got two questions kind of in one question here. One, who's going to buy all these bonds when the Fed pulls back? But two, do you think that there's going to be a point where if the longer yielding rates, like the 10-year and the 30-year, start creeping higher, does that give the Fed some cover to start hiking these rates?
Well, I guess some of those things go hand in hand. If it plays out like it did in 2018, then you're going to see everything that's considered a risk asset, as they say, sell off. You know, you guys and I have joked for years now about how we almost seem like we're turning toward one universal chart, right? I mean, everything, whether it's stocks or copper or Bitcoin or whatever, everything's so dependent now on the Fed that sometimes from a distance, their charts all start to look the same. And in 2018, you know, we were kind of fighting that. And eventually, like I said, the Fed ran off about $700 billion of their balance sheet over the 5 years from 14 through 18. 10-year note got all the way to 320. And then the stock market fell 20%. And then that changed everything. So how would it play out if it's something like that this time? Well, let's see, 20% down, the stock market taking the Dow down to about 30,000. But that's where it was this time last year. So that wouldn't be like some catastrophe unless it happened over the course of a week or two. As that plays out, there's kind of a natural progression into a bid for treasuries. Because if the stock market's going down, particularly if it's going down quickly, suddenly treasuries take on that little safe haven kind of thing. That then begins to, you know, move toward a flattening or even inversion of the yield curve as the Fed is tightening. that leads people start thinking about recession, whether it actually leads to one or not, doesn't really matter sometimes. It's, you know, it just becomes a narrative that's self-fulfilling. And then all of a sudden, you know, the Fed does actually accomplish this policy error that you hear people talking about. So as that plays out this year, which is certainly seems to be the direction we're going, then maybe, you know, like I said, after 3 or 4 months of some of this continued sideways, I mean, who knows? Maybe we can even go lower. Maybe gold goes down to 1680 again, like it did last year a couple of times. Silver, if 22 ever gives way on a weekly basis, I wouldn't be surprised to see it briefly fall below 20. But as the Fed then is forced to shift again, like it was 3 years ago, the trend in real interest rates starts going back down again. Gold and silver begin to pick up. Eventually, the Fed changed policy toward cutting. Gold and silver move farther again, much like they did in 2019, a year or something like that. In the end of the day, 2019 was a pretty good year for the precious metals, then extended into 2020, obviously. So I would suspect this year kind of plays out a little bit like that again. In fact, I remember writing my annual summary, my annual forecast 3 years ago in early 2019. I called it, the name of it that year was 2010 plus 9, because I figured 19 was going to play out a lot like 2010 did. And it did, kind of flat through the first half of the year and then soaring in the back half. And then 2011 continued on through August. Well, what happened in 2019? Kind of flat the first half of the year, soaring in the back half. 2020 continued on through August. So we'll see. I mean, this is challenging, no doubt about it. And this year with congressional elections in the U.S., everything else that's going on, it's going to be wildly volatile and very unpredictable. But I don't know. I imagine that's about how it's going to play out in the end.
Craig, I remember chatting with you back around 2019 and you coming out with that forecast and me doubting it, in all fairness, saying, man, I just don't see it. Like, gold has been stuck, right? And then it did start to take off. On the flip side of that, so did the markets, right? So what is the environment where finally gold can outperform the markets? Is it simply the markets correcting and gold actually having that store of value component and not dropping as much? Or is there an environment here where gold and the markets can go up, but more importantly, gold can go up faster?
Well, I don't know about the faster part. That's always going to be challenging. Again, I mean, think of it as one universal chart, right? All these different things that are called risk assets versus Fed policy. Fed tightens, everything goes down. Fed loosens, everything goes up. You know, and the stock market is a great example of that. I mean, all it's done is, ever since this latest round of QE started a year and a half ago, I mean, makes a new high once a month, falls back to the 50-day moving average, then later. Then goes back and makes a new high, falls back to the 50-day moving average again. You know, when the Fed creates this kind of cash, a lot of that seeps into the market, gets levered up. You know, that's cause and effect. So I don't know a circumstance where suddenly gold is going to outperform the stock market. And again, I'm reluctant to compare the two because they're two different things. You know, I mean, I think we all like, oh, look at my gold's up 25% and your stocks are only 15. Ha ha ha, look at me. That's fun. But it's a little too much like apples and oranges to try to compare them for what they are intended to do in an, you know, otherwise balanced portfolio, putting on my financial hat. So I would imagine gold might turn up before the stock market does, just, you know, stabilize at least as the stock market falls, if that's ultimately how this plays out over the next few months. But then the stock market will just rush to catch up again. Because again, the Fed, I mean, think of all of the irons in the fire in this regard that the Fed has to manage, because it's not just equity investors, people listening to us talk that have an IRA or a 401k or something. Billions and trillions of dollars of institutional money that has been forced into the stock market because the Fed has driven rates artificially down to zero, right? I mean, high yield bonds and all this other stuff that insurance companies and pension funds and the like all own, man, the last thing they can afford is a 20% haircut. It's like higher interest rates. The last thing the government can afford is to see the effective interest rate that they're paying on the accumulated debt double. I mean, you think the Ponzi's spinning out of control now at $500 billion a year in debt service costs for the government? What's it going to spin like at $1.5 trillion a year? So again, this notion, what amazes me is the markets, these smart, otherwise smart people have been fooled now on a couple of different occasions that the Fed, oh yes, the Fed, very responsible, and they're now going to start hiking rates to control inflation, and they're also going to pare down their balance sheet. Come on, man. Seriously? How many times are you going to pull that line? That's why I said, Maybe they got away with it for 5 years after QE1, 2, and 3 and the great financial crisis and all this stuff. But after what they've done with money supply and with QE and their balance sheet this time, you know, to now be parading out the same line of tricks, people are going to see through it pretty quick. And then the Fed's going to reverse. And then the curtain is pulled back. And people, I think in mass, begin to figure, people, I mean, generalists, hedge fund managers, that kind of stuff, people that read Forbes, they will finally see that the curtain's been pulled back and, you know, the Fed is really just trying to inflate bubbles as long as they can for as long as possible.
Yeah, Craig, the curtain will be pulled back and they'll realize the Wizard of Oz is just a crazy old man with a bunch of levers.
And a purple tie.
Startlingly purple tie. Well, the other thing is the definition of insanity, according to Albert Einstein, is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And I think it'll be more of the same. But I've got a question for you about if there's growth that slows next year, as some market economists are predicting, and we do have a turbulent year for 2022 on the platter here. Could we be hitting more of a stagflationary environment than we even were last year, where we still have higher inflation, we still have higher energy costs, we're seeing wages continue to rise and the workforce and labor issues persist. At the same time, we may see a slowdown in growth. So could they be hiking into a slow growth scenario and into a stagflationary environment?
Right, exactly, Shad. And that's, again, that's that policy error. And it's that idea that, as I've been writing my annual forecast for the last week, that's why, I mean, even before we got all this Fed nonsense yesterday, I was expecting gold to have a better year for those very same reasons. You look at, again, this notion that the Fed's going to be hiking into a declining economy. That's this policy error that people talk about. Well, even if they do hike, and you know, the discussion yesterday was, what, as soon as March, the Fed has always maintained that, you know, when they try to defend themselves, well, our ability to impact the economy is limited because anything we do takes at least 6 to 9 months to have any impact. Okay, well, let's say on the most aggressive scenario, the Fed starts hiking Fed funds in March. It's going to be next December, at least next fall, before that actually has an appreciable impact on inflation. Between now and then, inflation expectations, not only just inflation in general, but inflation expectations take stronger root. And so this notion, again, that real interest rates are now going back positive, and so you got to dump your gold and all that kind of stuff. Man, I just don't see it. I just don't see that happening. And I'll just, you know, give me one more thing too, because this always baffles me about mainstream press and generalist market observers. Why the hell does it take 3 weeks for the Fed to crank out the minutes? You know, I mean, what they have an army of people making $300,000 a year. They got their own police force. You're telling me they don't have a collection of stenographers and secretaries that can transcribe that crap from 24 hours worth of meetings and put it out the next day? The hell do they take 3 weeks for? Well, what I've always thought, and I asked Daniel DiMartino Booth at one point this, it's so that they can craft the narrative. If they don't get the market reaction they want the first time, then they can adjust the minutes to emphasize what they wanted to emphasize 3 weeks later. That's why they do it. And if you go back 3 weeks ago, why was all this talk about balance sheet trimming and all that kind of stuff? Why did that not come up? Well, because 3 weeks ago, everybody was freaking out about Omicron and new lockdowns and all this kind of stuff. They weren't going to go out on a limb talking about that. But 3 weeks later, well, maybe we'll include some of that stuff. Look, this is, maybe I sound like a whack job, but again, why in the world does it take 3 weeks for that information to be made public? I mean, that could all be transcribed and made public as soon as Powell finishes his press conference. But they choose not to, and they choose not to for a reason, and you saw some of that yesterday.
Yeah, you know what? It is all about crafting the narrative. 3 weeks,
yep.
You get the minutes. The next 3 weeks, you get another meeting, all eyes continuing to be on the Fed. But
right.
To the point of investors, people broadly, losing faith in the Fed. Craig, I've heard this for the last decade, where, look, the Fed is making mistakes, and the market is going to crash, and the economy is going to crash, and we can't withstand what the Fed is doing, and everyone's going to wake up to the Fed being wrong this whole time. Fact of the matter is, markets are still at all-time highs. The economy still seems to be chugging along, even though there are issues. But there are issues with every economy. Why now? Why this time, after a decade, even more than a decade, people complaining about the Fed? Why this time is it going to be different? Because in all fairness, again, I've heard this argument, and it hasn't rung true yet.
Well, because Corey, I don't know how many times I got to point at your shirt like you dribbled gravy below your chin and have you look down and then I doink you with my finger. I mean, how many times are you going to fall for that, you know?
What do you mean fall for that, though? Because in all fairness, the people investing in the markets are making money.
Well, but which is fine. That's fine. What I'm talking about is credibility in terms of, oh, yes, we are responsible and we're going to trim our balance sheet. And we're going to raise interest rates up to a level that, you know, is normal, you know, so that savers can earn 5% again and stuff. That's garbage. Now, everybody might have been willing.
Have they said that they want savers to make money? Have they? I haven't totally heard that from the Fed.
Well, no, but
they have admitted that they are really behind the curve. But
I added that part, Corey. What I'm talking about is this idea that rates are going to normalize, whatever that means. For example, when the last time inflation was 10%, what was U.S. interest rates? 8, 9, or 15%, and interest rates were 10? Or the last time German inflation was this high, the 10-year bund was at 6%, now it's at 0? I mean, they play this game trying to convince everybody that everything's fine. We've got it all under control and just go about your business. And that's worked for a lot of people so far because the Fed just keeps creating money and everybody believes there's still value in the dollar and in their savings and all that kind of stuff. What I'm suggesting is eventually the time's going to come where people are going to go, wait a second, I've seen this before. Stock market may keep going up, but this notion that the dollar is some kind of safe haven when it's being printed so quickly, that eventually fades away. And that ultimately affects what I care about, which is gold.
Well, Craig, one thing as far as the normalizing rates that I saw the Fed put out was they said they believe the normalized rates would be around 2.5% to 3%. And that seems to indicate they believe inflation will be coming down to that level from the 6.8% CPI reading and 8.5% PPI reading, and will be trending lower and lower as we get past the supply chain issues and past some of the craziness that we're in right now. Do you think that that's what they mean? Because for most people, when they think about normalizing interest rates, historically they were between 4% to 7%, not 2.5%, not 3%. And it just doesn't seem likely they could normalize them in that way. Do you think that's why they're changing the definition to some degree of what normalizing the rates even means?
Sure. I think that makes perfect sense, Shad. But again, I would just remind you and everybody listening that they played this game for 5 years and managed to run off about $700 billion of their balance sheet over that 5-year period. And rates gradually rose, particularly from 2016 to 2018, from about 1.5 on the 10-year up to 3.25. And at that point, everything broke. And everything has really been broken since. I don't know if you guys had a chance to read some of the stuff from Pam and Russ Mertens on Wall Street and Parade this week about the banks and how many billions and trillions they demanded from the Fed in repo at the end of 2019, if you remember that crisis. And so I just think everything is still broken in that regard. So can they go to 2.5? Can they let the 10-year go to 2.5? I mean, if they step away completely next year, I saw a thing from Zero Hedge yesterday. If they step away completely next year and don't buy any treasuries at all, it leaves about a $1.5 trillion hole that someone's going to have to buy. Well, how are you going to attract buyers for a $1.5 trillion if you don't have rates double? Well, if rates double, then what happens? So this is a real conundrum that they've got in their hands. And they try to play this game rhetorically. They try to thread that needle by talking about higher rates. Maybe that'll get the dollar to rally. Maybe that, and if the dollar rallies, maybe that'll lessen inflation, all that kind of stuff. But man, this is a pretty tenuous spot. I'm frankly surprised Powell wanted the job a second time. If I was him, man, I'd just retire and start collecting six-figure speech payments. But I don't know. Like as we began this call, guys, for a guy who makes a living out of predicting things, I'm probably burying myself looking ahead at 2022 because this is going to be a wildly volatile and unpredictable year. And man, we are just getting started.
Yes, we are already. We've seen some volatility, which, hey, makes it a bit more fun. And this is going to be a very different year than last year. We'll see how far the Fed can get with their rate hikes. We'll see how the market reacts, and we'll see where inflation goes. Those are some key considerations for this year. Craig, always fun chatting with you, man. I love taking the other side of the argument. I love all your answers on that side. So thanks, as always, for your time, buddy. We'll chat again next week. Hope you have a great rest of your week.
You too, guys. All the best.